Thank you for tuning in to the Movie Geeks United Books on Film series. Tonight, we discuss the new book, Dan O'Bannon's Guide to Screenplay Structure, Inside Tips from the Writer of Alien, Total Recall, and Return of the Living Dead. Mr. O'Bannon's career in screenwriting, particularly in the genres of science fiction and horror, is legendary. Work on this book occupied his later years, prior to his untimely death in 2009. In this interview, we discuss the book and Mr. O'Bannon's work with co-author Matt Lohr and Mr. O'Bannon's wife, Diane. I've read a little bit about, well, obviously it's stated in the book how it got started, but just to kind of summarize for our listeners, Matt, when you came on to assist with the book, it was already something like 70% or so complete, right?
Maybe even 75, 80. I was brought in 2001. I was actually a student at Chapman University in Orange County, California at the time in the screenwriting program. And our thesis advisor at the time, who was Leonard Schrader, who's the writer of Kiss of the Spider-Woman and Paul Schrader's brother, came to us and let us know that the school's filmmaker in residence was looking for a graduate student to help him with a book that he was working on. Every year Chapman has a filmmaker in residence who's a master filmmaker who teaches master courses and also does like a lecture series on his films. That semester, our filmmaker in residence was Dan O'Bannon. And I didn't have to be told who Dan O'Bannon was. I grew up reading Starlog and Fangoria, so I knew him and his work very, very well. And when he explained the assignment, all of my classmates, almost separately, came to me and said, Matt, this is a great fit for you. You should do this. So I had Leonard put me in touch with Dan, and we met, and it seemed like a good fit. And we worked on the book together directly for about 2 years after that. Unfortunately, of course, you know, Dan had battled some health problems during the course of his life. He had Crohn's disease, and which he first developed on the set of Dark Star all the way back in the early 70s and 73, 74. And at the end of 2009, unfortunately, Dan passed away with the book then unpublished. I stayed in touch with Diane through that time. She was sort of my conduit, so I didn't know what Dan was doing. He was in and out of various health centers and such for most of the last few years of his life. And we had always kept in touch and kept in contact. And early in 2011, Diane contacted me and let me know that Michael Wiese Productions, the folks that did Save the Cat and Your Screenplay Sucks, a lot of other great books, were interested in publishing Dan's book, but they felt there was a little bit of editing that needed to be done and a few sections that needed to be sort of polished up and tweaked a little bit. And she basically came to me and asked me, you know, would you be able to do this? You know the material better than anybody at this point. And so I spent about another year sort of getting the manuscript up to speed, and the book came out earlier this year. So it's been sort of a long process. I mean, Dan started it much before this. I mean, Diane can speak to some of the things that she found in his notes that indicated that he was already heading this way.
That's actually what I was going to ask about, Diane, if this was a passion project that had consumed Dan for a while, this book.
Absolutely. He'd basically been working on it since he started writing. Writing is a bad job in some ways. It's very, very difficult to do. And if you want to get a story out of it, you really have to know your stuff. So he started looking right away at that time for how-to books. And there's a very funny story about a book he's heard of called Plotto in Dan's book about a place where you can find all the plots in the world. Well, yeah. Anyway, but he started writing. I found going through some boxes recently, a page from the 70s, and it's the top of the page says, Dan O'Bannon's Rules of Writing, number one, never bore your audience. So he was thinking about this as a beginning writer, and it basically is a distillation of his whole, you know, basically 40-year career as a writer, what he found important and what he felt that could be passed on to somebody and be of value.
So there's he was obviously aware that there is a gluttony of how-to screenwriting books out there, but he really set out to write something. First of all, it's extremely valuable that a book comes along from a writer that actually has one of the great legendary careers in screenwriting, someone that's actually knows what it's like to sell a screenplay. That's always a bonus. But
right, I think that's a very valuable part of it.
But he wanted to give a different take. I mean, this isn't how to write. I mean, he's not teaching you how to write. I mean, you have to come to the process with some talent and of your own, obviously.
Right. Yeah, and there's actually a moment in the book where he says about one of the other books that we discussed that this particular book that he's talking about tries to do something he wouldn't even presume to do, which is teach you how to write well. And so he basically admits, I'm not trying to teach you how to write necessarily with this book.
Yeah, yeah. Give me a little, Diane, give me a little insight into his process, because as you say, writing is very difficult, and a lot of people find it to be a painful process. What was his process like when he wrote, and in your observation, what did he go through when he was writing?
Well, it was a painful process, and it's a completely absorbing one. One of the big things when we had our child, Adam, was like, don't disturb Daddy. You know, you can't interrupt a writer. It takes immersion in the subject. One of the things he said about Alien that he sort of didn't want to do again, he said, you have to go live there. You know, he had to go live in the spaceship. You have to confront the monster. So you have to, as a writer, you have to go through this yourself, and it's not necessarily always a very fun process, and it's completely absorbing. Dan was he said there are two kind of writers, no window writer and a window writer, and he was a no window writer. So if people have to find their own way of doing this. Dan liked to write at night because he was unaware of time passing, you know, and it was quiet then. So he did a lot of that.
And Matt, tell me what kind of as a you know, he was in some ways, I would think, a kind of a mentor to you. What made him an inspiring presence for you?
Well, the interesting thing for me about it was Dan was very much a mentor to me, but it wasn't in a conscious sense, because the thing I always remind folks is that I wasn't there for Dan to teach me how to write like Dan. I was there to help him with a task that he was trying to accomplish. So there weren't a lot of moments where it became didactic. There wasn't a lot of, here's how this works and here's how I do this. It was more of a sense that story in Dan, I mean, I obviously met Dan later in his life, and once he'd already accomplished many of the great things he would accomplish. So story in him by that point was so innate that when I would speak to him about story, his understanding of it was so complete and so clear at the same time that when he would make a point, no further elaboration was necessary. It was, I always say, it was almost like I was learning a lot of things from him almost by osmosis, just by being in the room with him and seeing him pick apart things. Because sometimes we would watch films together that we were possibly planning on writing about for the book. I remember watching The Setup, the Robert Weiss boxing film that's discussed briefly in the chapter on pace, and just sort of seeing points that he would hit that never would have occurred to me in terms of the way certain story beats are laid out. I also had a chance, and this is one of the great memories of my life as a writer, we had a chance to watch Return of the Living Dead together. There was an anniversary edition of it that was getting ready to come out on DVD when I was working with Dan, and a copy of it was sent over for him to look at, to check the color corrections, to make sure the color timing was correct. And Dan basically asked me, do you want to watch this with me and see how it looks? And I was essentially treated to a live director commentary track of Return of the Living Dead. We basically sat and watched the film together. He told me a lot of stories. I know how a lot of the special effects were done, how the split dogs were operated, you know, stories about the cast and the crew. And it was just a singular experience, one that, you know, I was unique. I mean, it would be interesting. I don't know if I ever bothered to listen to the commentary track on the disc after that, because I almost felt like, why do I need you? I got the private, you know, one-on-one version of this. But it would be interesting to see if some of the stories are different. Of course, I know the disc that came out at that time, I know Bill Stout, the production designer, is on the commentary track as well, so it would be interesting to get to hear Bill's thoughts. But I learned so much just, like I said, it was very much just a sitting at the feet of the master kind of a vibe. You know, and I think we had a good give and take, which probably helped. I think we respected each other, so he wasn't cagey about the information. He was willing to speak freely to me because he knew that I was, you know, that there was fellow feeling there. So we were on the same page, so to speak.
I've been curious about that because he, I mean, he wrote and directed Return of the Living Dead, obviously, and I believe he directed something else from a script that was not his own.
Right. Diane could probably speak a little more to that because I believe you guys were together at the time when he did The Resurrected.
Yeah, he directed the Resurrected. I think the screenwriter's name is Friedman. I forget his name, but yeah. So he did the adaptation of that.
I'm so sorry. I wanted to know about that process is, did he get a different sense of the writer's job from sitting in the director's chair?
No. Okay. No. He was pretty good. Dan was also a very good editor and was very, which is essentially structuring what film you have there. So he had a pretty clear handle on that. And as a director and a writer, I think some of the main differences are in having to do a lot with budget. You know, you have to, if you don't have the budget for the two scenes you want, you have to combine them in some way, this sort of thing. So a lot of that kind of thing happens, even if in with Dan's own screenplays. You know, I mean, you write it at the best possible way you would like it shown, and once you sit in the director's chair, you have to make adjustments anyway. As I say, due to budget or the people involved or whatever, you know, whatever you're presented with. So I think that is how that works, really.
And he's...
Yeah,
go ahead.
Dan wrote in pictures very much. We've actually found some versions. Diane and I came across one of his earlier drafts of Total Recall, his preferred draft, which I believe was written in 1982. And there actually are illustrations in certain parts of the script. He brought in, I believe it was Thomas Workington, Diane, did the artwork that's with the draft of Total Recall. So the fact that Workington was able to work up these sort of schematics of some of the visuals indicates that Dan's work, he wrote as films. He wrote as a filmmaker, and it's very coherent in terms of sort of where his images take your eye in a particular scene and where they take your mind's eye in a particular scene. So I think he had a very good sense of writing for cinema. And I think it comes through very strongly in everything that he wrote. Alien's screenplay, which I've read, is the same way.
Yeah, he saw the movie in his head as he was writing it along. So,
in terms of genre, another part of this book that I love is the spotlighting of films across genres. There's even a discussion on the merits of Dumb and Dumber. In this book.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah, but he had particular success, obviously, on a legendary level with the sci-fi genre. What drew him to that genre in particular, do you think?
Well, he was born loving that genre. You know, given choices as a little kid of what movie to watch, you know, something from Walt Disney or The Thing from Another World. He would he picked The Thing, and he never looked back. It was just his nature.
So tell me a little bit about the content of the book. First of all, his view on rules, because in the book he talks about happening upon the idea of the three-act structure and really responding to it and finding out why that structure works. What did he feel about actually going out and kind of trying to break those rules?
Well, Dan says in the book that the rules embalm screenplays. And being a writer, Dan has an understanding of semantics. So he understands that there's a big difference between saying three-act structure works and saying you have to use three-act structure. They're two different statements. And Dan demonstrates throughout the book that the three-act structure, which was his preferred method of constructing a story, is a structure that works, and he demonstrates how it works. And I think his feeling was that all stories, regardless of the act of visions that they purport to have, in a way arc back to that three acts because it's a very elegant, streamlined system. One of the examples of a text that's analyzed in the book is King Lear. And Shakespeare, of course, always wrote in a five-act structure. But we also demonstrate in the book, it is a five-act structure on the stage, yes, but here's how you could break the story that that five-act play tells down into the three acts. And it still works as a three-act structure, even though Shakespeare used the five-act division. I think that Dan believes that if you're relying too much on rules, you run the risk of creating the illusion that your script works when it doesn't, because you might have a script that's got abominable things in it and doesn't work as a story at all, but you might say, well, how could it not work? All the beats happen on exactly the page that they're supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that might be true, but they don't happen in an organic way. They don't come from the characters. They don't come from conflict. So your script's not going to work even though the pieces are in place. It's like you could get all of the pieces to build a fantastic house, but if you put them all together in the wrong way and you put them together in a way that doesn't allow for architectural ingenuity and imagination, you're going to have a house that's either going to fall apart when you try to walk into it or that nobody's going to want to live into anyway because it's going to be too boring and have a bad view. So I think Dan really got the sense of that. And he uses the architectural analogy. He quotes the line that William Goldman had when he says structure is carpentry. But the whole thing to remember is structure may be carpentry, and carpentry is just a notion. If you hire Philip Johnson to design you a house, you're not going to get the same thing where if you hire Frank Lloyd Wright or Le Corbusier to design you a house, because they bring their own feel to it, even though essentially it's four walls and a roof. So I think I think screenwriting is the same way, and I think Dan tries to give the writer enough room in the way he lays out his system to let the writer build their house their own way.
Mm-hmm. And it's particularly in the more fantastical genres of film. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. You run the risk of in portraying the spectacle and the uniqueness of the world you're creating, it usually a lot of times comes at the sacrifice of characters that really resonate. So what was his approach to building a character?
You might be able to talk to a little bit about this thing, because we've talked about some of the conversations that he had with you about writing female characters and things like that.
I can speak to something very interesting about him in terms of that, is that he was really a sort of natural feminist. He saw women throughout his life being very strong, so he was always, and he liked that. He felt he needed rescuing on several occasions, so he was always willing to have the woman step up and do things like that. But, you know, I didn't have to do too much of that. I think he always placed himself as the everyman in the story, but he also placed himself as the monster in the story. I don't know. Kind of hard to say. Mm. What do you think, Matt?
Well, I will say one thing that I think Dan understood that comes through very clearly in his writing. One thing that is notable about Dan's work is that his films all have very strong antagonists. His films, you remember his villains. I mean, he gave us arguably one of the most iconic villains in cinema history. Not arguably, he gave us one of the most iconic villains in cinema history with the Xenomorph and the Alien films. And the reason I think Dan was able to do that is because I think his notion of character was very directly impacted by his notion of conflict. Dan talks about his concept of conflict in the story, because most people, if you ask them what's the story about, they'll tell you it's about a protagonist versus obstacles in the way of his goal. Dan conceives it very differently. He conceives it as two antagonists in opposition with opposed goals. And by doing that, he did something that was very important to his way of creating character, which was he gave the antagonist a complete coherent point of view. If you look at the Alien film, if you look at the film, the crew of the Nostromo is on one side, and they have a very clear and definite goal. They want to survive and get home. But if you look at the Xenomorph, he also has a goal, and his goal is directly in opposition to the goals of the heroes. He wants to eat them. He wants to use their bodies to incubate his young, and he's going to do that whatever way that he can. So Dan always felt that that was very important. He says at one point in the book, if you have a character in a scene trip over a chair, within the context of that scene, that chair should have sort of a reason and a motive within the narrative tripping the person. He talks about that you can have man versus non-man in a story. You can have man versus his environment as a conflict. And I think because of that, Dan was able to create really vivid villains. In fact, when I use terms a lot of times, I don't talk about protagonists and antagonists so much anymore. I call them positive antagonists and negative antagonists. Because, there's that old story that everybody thinks they're the hero of their own story. I'm sure if you ask the xenomorph, what's Alien about? He's going to give you a much different answer than if you ask Ripley, what's Alien about? Because, you ask the xenomorph, oh, it's about this alien that just wants something to eat, and these horrible people try to foil him from getting to eat. They're trying to starve him, this poor alien. And it's an interesting way of looking at that. Villains never think that they're villains. They're always the hero of their own story.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So
it makes a really, really, a really strong threat in a screenplay if you give the devil his due.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So did he have, does he have a lot of unproduced works that you've happened upon?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we have a lot of stuff, and I'm sort of sorting through that. And even the produced work, his versions of the produced work are in some cases, like in Total Recall, very different than, well, not very different, but somewhat different, have a different take on them, which is interesting. Another one is Blue Thunder. It's very, very different, although I like the one that was made. His version is very interesting. So there's a lot of that that I might put out in some form or other. I'm still working on that. But something that's interesting to me is that when he didn't particularly have anything to work on, he had several old beloved science fiction stories of What Mad Universe and Stars My Destination. And just for sheer love of the material, he went ahead and wrote screenplays for those. He didn't have the rights to them or anything, but he took them as a challenge to, to get the best of these stories and deliver that. Which he felt he was good at it. He did that for Phil Dick's stuff, and a good interpreter of other people's writing, of finding what's good in the story, the thread in the story, how to keep that going, and throw the rest, what can be thrown out without affecting the emotional content of the story. So he was good at that.
Well, this goes to the point you guys were making about his never putting spectacle over character and conflict. What did he think of the direction that movies were taking? I mean, was he discouraged by the movie climate of recent years?
Well, yeah, he was always pretty upset with that. They just that the studios just kept recycling things and Chainsaw 3 or whatever it was, they would just keep working on that. But towards the end, he realized that it was kind of futile to expect anything else, since it was it became so corporatized. It was no longer the seat of your pants sort of movie making for the love of that, for the love of storytelling. It's a corporate business. But he had given up at the end writing very expensive to do screenplays. Because he said, well, it's impossible to do. The suits, the accountants decide what's going to make the money, and they'll make that. He wrote a couple of very extremely low budget horror films that I've got here that I'm still trying to kind of get produced, and we'll see how that goes. Got a couple of fun.
And I think Dan was honest enough within that belief about film to recognize that part of the responsibility for making sure there's quality film out there does fall to the consumer as well. There's a moment in the preface of the book where I recall a conversation I had with him where he did his impression of the typical moviegoer to me. And it was a series of hungry bird cheepings. Cheep, cheep, cheep. Give me the worm guts. I'm not discerning. Just give me something to fill my belly. And I think if you look at some of the pictures that open big, it's hard to almost deny that. It's like, we just need a movie. We don't care what it is. We don't care what the content is or if it's stimulating or well thought out. We need something to do. We need something in front of our eyeballs. And that's all that some people require, unfortunately, when they go to the movies. Although I think if they were being very honest with themselves, they would say, they would look at some of these films and say, yeah, well, my belly's full, but there's no nutrition being provided here.
Right.
And, you know, you've had days like that. I've had days where I've gone through and I feel sick, like, at the end of the day. And I'm like, yeah, because you ate nothing but junk food all day.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you have those days where you're on the road or something like that. And I think a film can be the same way. You know, people do look for spiritual, emotional, and sort of, you know, the pleasure centers to be nourished. And there's a lot of films that aren't really providing that, you know. They're providing, you know, 2 hours in an air-conditioned room on a summer afternoon, and that's about it.
I agree completely. And I look at it, particularly in the horror genre. I mean, if something kind of bold and somewhat original comes along the pike, and it doesn't do well, and yet people flock to the latest, you know, pick a title and put a six at the end of it or something.
Right.
I'm thinking, no, this here is the movie that you should be supporting.
Right. Horror is an interesting...
Go ahead.
Well, horror is an interesting thing because horror, you know, I've listened to a lot of commentators talk about it because obviously, you know, with the connection to Dan's book, I've been somewhat steeped in horror in the last few months. So I've thought about it a lot. And I did hear a commentator mention that one of the interesting things about horror is one of the few genres of cinema out there where the genre is basically the star. I mean, there are star filmmakers and star actors within that genre, but the main draw is, a lot of times, is just the fact that it's a horror movie. You know, people will go because they say, I'm a horror fan, I look for certain things out of a movie, this movie might provide those things. And I think that's really interesting. We're actually getting ready, tomorrow there's a film coming out that's sort of in the horror genre called The Purge. And it looks like it's a movie that hopefully is going to do something interesting. It's got sort of a stimulating, potentially politically charged premise. And I'm going to be very curious to see how it gets pulled off. But I'm quite sure there are a lot of people who are looking at that and saying, oh, it's a horror movie. There might be some scares in there. I like scares. I'll go see that. And even if the movie doesn't deliver on the promise of its political premise, they might be perfectly satisfied if they get the requisite jumps that they want out of it.
Well, and plus the sci-fi horror genres, they really have a special power of delivering subversive social or political commentary within them.
Absolutely.
Was Dan attracted to that aspect of that genre?
Not at all. He was in it for the thrills. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to give the audience a good thrill, a good scare, which is what he enjoyed himself. And
yeah.
He thought anything else that came out would come out naturally and it would be secondary. He said, you find these things afterwards. You find that you've been... People, you know, when you read the critics, he's talking about this portion of the, you know, political aspect, and he says all that stuff is just naturally present in your work without having to do too much deliberate addition to it. It's there naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think his attitude about it's very clearly expressed in the analysis of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's in the book because he basically says, yeah, we all know McCarthyism, communism, 50s, but what's really interesting is how this movie shocks you, and he sort of lays out the way that that works. So he recognizes that those things are there, but he also recognizes that those things can be totally incidental to whether or not the movie actually works or fails as a film.
Right, right. So tell me, I want to know, lastly, when you guys have gone around discussing the book and... I would imagine you guys have also spoken among audience members to some aspiring or younger screenwriters. How are they inspired by Dan's work and this book in particular? What are they getting from it, do you think?
Well, I think that people look at what Dan accomplished. And I think that the main thing that I think Dan holds out for a lot of people, and I know he held it out for me, is just the fact that you can work within a genre and create great art at the same time. I've talked a lot to the people that I've spoken with about a concept that I call the straight jacket of just, by which I mean there's such a drive among the sort of cinematic critical establishment and the cultural establishment to put people in a genre box by saying the word just. Oh, he's just a science fiction writer. He just writes horror movies. He just writes things about monsters. And I think what Dan did, Dan was never a person that was willing to get into that straitjacket. His basic attitude was, I write stories. I'm a storyteller. I craft narrative. I create incidents and events that hopefully will be exciting and stimulating and thrilling to an audience. The fact that those events frequently involve monsters or beings from another planet traveling through space is entirely incidental to the main effects that I want to create, which is a great piece of entertainment. So Dan never allowed his work to be condescended to because it was genre cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the filmmakers I talk to, because a lot of people that come, frankly, you know, because it's Dan's work, they are primarily people that are interested in working in genre, people that want to make horror films, people that want to make science fiction films. And the message I hope that Dan's book and that I'm able to put across to them when I talk to them is don't let anybody make you feel like your work is lesser because your work is in the genre. And I think that's very important.
Right.
And one last thing I think that he says in the book is that the concept of entertainment must be understood widely. There'll be many ways of entertaining in the future, and as there have been in the past. And this book really imparts what he found valuable in the whole storytelling process.